Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You know, July 14th is celebrated as Bastille Day in France. It was the day the French people began overthrowing their king with a goal of having a free country, just like we did. And we won our revolution with the help of the French monarchy. Interesting. Speaking of it being interesting about overthrowing nations, it said that Chinese leader Mao once said, quote, "The only way to deal with America is first to weaken the family, undermine the church, and then feminize the men," end quote. Wow. Look around and see if that's happening here. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, you spent some time visiting family this month. Your family's growing, isn't it? Any of them going in the Marines?
Well, not right away, Colonel. But yeah, family's growing. You know, I've got seven kids, right? The oldest is 37. The youngest is 12. You figure out how I did that and then do it a different way and you'll be fine. But then I also have 19 grandchildren. Last week, we welcomed young Peter to the Coriel clan, and that is my 19th grandchild. And we visited over there and just had a good time with my daughter and her nine children.
That's got to be a blessing. And it's also yes. It's also a blessing to be home.
Yes. Well, you know, I love being a grandparent. I go there. I have fun with the kids. They need to be changed. I pass it to somebody else. And, you know, then yeah. I go home.
Uh-huh. Amen, brother. Okay, here's what we have for you today. On News and Comment by the Colonel, I'm going to insist that China is an adversary of our nation, not just a competitor, as Washington suggests. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, Navy vet William Thomas from Concerned Veterans for America will join us to discuss Concerned Veterans for America's efforts to get our nation on the right path. Then we're going to hear from Korean War vet Howard Davis. He went into combat without having gone through basic training. And Coast Guard vet Mark Northrop will share how a great many veterans are not getting the support from the VA they deserve and how to get it. And then we'll introduce a new segment staffed by two Marines. We're calling it Marine B&B, but B&B doesn't stand for bread and breakfast. Gil Mazza will discuss our southern border, and Skip Coriel will present some books you may find interesting.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and your comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or you can do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, in a sealed room behind a gauntlet of armed guards and three rows of high barbed wire at the Army's Pueblo Chemical Depot in Colorado, a team of robotic arms was busily disassembling some of the last of our nation's vast and ghastly stockpile of chemical weapons. In went artillery shells filled with deadly mustard agent that the Army had been storing for over 70 years. The bright yellow robots pierced, drained, and washed each shell, then baked it at 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. Out came inert and harmless scrap metal, falling off a conveyor belt into an ordinary brown dumpster with a resounding clank. Quote, "That's the sound of a chemical weapon dying," said Kingston Reef, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Threat Reduction and Arms Control. He smiled as another shell clanked into the dumpster. The destruction of the stockpile has taken decades, and the Army says the work is just about finished. The depot near Pueblo destroyed its last weapon in June. The remaining handful at another depot in Kentucky was destroyed in the next few days. Now, all of the world's publicly declared chemical weapons have been eliminated.
Theoretically, Russia and all the other nations that had chemical weapons have now destroyed theirs, too. The international rules of war have banned these weapons for several decades, and as far as we know, none have been used. I'm glad we no longer have any, but that doesn't mean that they'll never be used again by someone. Today's world is full of people who have no intention of playing by the rules.
And several Chinese Coast Guard vessels attempted on June 30 to prevent two Philippine patrol ships from reaching Second Thomas Shoal in the Spratly Islands, a routine patrol. The Philippine government is protesting this harassment.
No surprise here. This is China making it clear that they do whatever they want to do and that other rules and laws don't apply to them. China's leadership is pure evil.
And Russia recently fired cruise missiles at a western Ukraine city far from the front line of the war, killing at least 6 people in an apartment building in what officials said was the heaviest attack on civilian areas of Lviv since the Kremlin's forces invaded the country last year. Emergency crews went through the rubble of the building after the nighttime attack destroyed the roof and the top 2 floors. At least 36 people were injured. Debris and wrecked parked cars lined the street outside the building, which overlooks a small neighborhood park with swings and other playground equipment. Lviv Mayor Andrei Sedyov said the body of a woman was pulled from the rubble, bringing the death toll to 6. 7 survivors were rescued from wreckage and a total of 14 people hospitalized. Sadyov said around 60 apartments and 50 cars in the area of strike were damaged. He announced 2 days of official mourning. Ukraine's Air Force reported it intercepted 7 of the 10 caliber cruise missiles that Russia fired from the Black Sea toward the Lviv region, over 500 miles away. The Kremlin's forces have repeatedly hit civilian areas during the war, though Russian officials say they choose only targets of military value.
In war, international standards require the enemy attack only military targets, not civilian ones. The Russian leadership seems to have no honor and ignores laws they don't wish to obey. This is evil.
And Sweden and Turkey made some progress in talks aimed at overcoming President Erdogan's objections to the Nordic country joining NATO, but gaps still remain in their positions, and their leaders will meet to discuss them. Sweden's entry would be a symbolically powerful moment, and the latest indication that Russia's war in Ukraine is driving countries to join the alliance. Those hopes have been all but dashed. Stoltenberg told reporters after the meeting that he, Erdogan, and Swedish Prime Minister Kristersson would hold talks in an effort to bridge the gap we still see. Quote, "We all agreed that we have made good progress. We all agreed that the full membership of Sweden is in the security interest of all allies, and we all want to conclude this process as soon as possible," Stoltenberg said. But he added, "There are some unresolved issues. We are addressing them now. We'll work on it over the weekend." Fearing for their security, Sweden and neighboring Finland ended their long-standing policy of military non-alignment after Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022 and applied to join NATO. Only Turkey and Hungary have delayed Sweden's membership. The other 29 allies, Stoltenberg and Sweden, have all said the country has done enough to satisfy Turkey's demands. Sweden has changed its constitution, modified anti-terror laws, and lifted an arms embargo on Turkey, among other concessions. But Turkey accuses Sweden of being too lenient towards groups that Ankara says pose a security threat, including militant Kurdish groups and people associated with a 2016 coup attempt. NATO requires the unanimous approval of all 31 members to expand.
It's interesting that Turkey, who has supported ISIS and other groups, is opposed to Sweden's support of similar groups. Indeed, Turkey is more pro-Russia than it is pro-NATO. It does make sense for Finland and Sweden to seek protection from evil Russia, but the NATO rule is that an attack on one is an attack on all. Do we really want to have to be the world's cop? We have neither the military strength nor the financial ability to do that. This is tough. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with William Thomas from Concerned Veterans for America. At ease, troops, take a break.
Health HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. You hear the sound of breaking glass at 2 a.m. What should you do? Many people get a flashlight to investigate, but that could get you killed. Get your firearm immediately. Take up a defensive position in your safe room, then call 911 and wait for the police to arrive. The police can do the job they were trained for, and you and your family can stay safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. As I've said numerous times, China has long been an existential threat to our nation and to global security. And this threat has grown substantially in the past 2 years due to our nation's currently weak national security policies, plus the global perception that our president is not competent. By calling China a competitor, not an adversary, our president shows that we don't understand the threat. Somehow our nation's leaders aren't concerned with China's hostile behavior and ruthless efforts to displace us as the world's leading power, and that makes China an adversary. By simply calling China a competitor, we normalize China's rogue behavior and make it appear no different than any other behavior of any other nation. The Heritage Foundation agrees in its new report, Winning the New Cold War, a plan for countering China. These authors do call China an adversary, but they go further, calling our relations with China a new Cold War. Indeed, they see this Cold War as very different and more dangerous than our Cold War with the Soviet Union, because China is an adversary even more capable and more dangerous than the Soviets were. They base this conclusion by noting that, unlike the Soviets, the world is fractured on how to deal with the threat from China, who is a near economic peer of ours and is embedded in the global economy. China has also exploited the freedom of democratic societies and free trade to infiltrate countries worldwide to promote its malign interests, undermine the rules-based international order, steal defense secrets and intellectual property, and create a dependency on China. The best example of our nation's leaders' refusal to confront China is our refusal to hold China accountable for the COVID-19 pandemic and its refusal to cooperate with an international investigation into the virus's origin. Our relations with China have deteriorated because of our failed and, shall we say, non-serious foreign and defense policies. Our insane and disastrous abandonment and withdrawal from Afghanistan was a huge hit to our nation's credibility and to our president's leadership on the world stage. Add to this our president's confusing and incoherent statements on global security issues, including how we would defend Taiwan, which his staff quickly walked back, made us look even weaker and more foolish. Then, when you think things just can't get any worse, our government announced it was making climate change its top national security threat. It's quite clear that China's leadership wants to replace the U.S.-based global order with their power and values. Indeed, their president Xi Jinping's writings predict that China will replace us as the world's leading military and economic power because of the superiority of the Chinese system and the corruption and decline of the U.S. and the West. This will allow China to replace the rules-based global order with a new order rooted in Chinese power and much more friendly to the Chinese Communist Party. No surprise here. Xi's approach differs from his predecessors, who sought to gain power through and in the U.S.-led rules-based global order. What will have to go is the Western culture and values, such as UN resolutions on human rights, democracy, and free trade. Xi wants to establish the Chinese yuan as the world's new reserve currency because he deems our dollars holding the role is unfair due to the control it gives us over global finances, especially our ability to impose and enforce trade sanctions, sometimes unilaterally. It's worthy of note that many rogue states, very much including Russia, share this concern. And in the middle of all this, some of our senior military commanders see war with Russia in the near future. The deterioration of our relationship with China in the past 2 years, coupled with the stepped-up provocative military maneuvers in the waters and skies near Taiwan, has led a lot of experts to feel that Beijing could well be planning to take over Taiwan in the next few years. It's worthy of note that while China's official doctrine is that China will seize Taiwan by 2049, our admiral in charge of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command said China may move to take the islands in the next 6 years, and Air Force General Mike Minahan, head of the Air Mobility Command, said in a January memo that we could be at war with China in 2 years. China reacted angrily when then-House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan last year in August. They conducted unprecedented naval operations around the island and fired ballistic missiles over Taiwan, and they increased cyber attacks. China also sanctioned two American organizations that hosted the Taiwan president during her recent visit to our nation. So how is China getting ready for war? Well, they had a 7.2% increase in their defense spending this year, the second year in a row that it was over 7%, and this while China's GDP has a weak 5% growth. China is upgrading its naval and air forces to operate longer at sea and further from its shores. Indeed, China's Navy surpassed our Navy as the world's largest in 2020, and they plan to have 400 ships by next year. Our Navy hopes to have 350 ships by 2045. China's third aircraft carrier should enter service next year. One downside to China's plans is the moving of their economy away from free trade and back to Marxism. This could well slow them down in achieving their plans. Bottom line, our government needs to take China seriously as an existential and ruthless threat to our freedom and security. We don't have to just sit by and watch them grow in power and importance in the world. Until we get some serious and logical leaders running our nation, we can expect China to continue to make major and dangerous gains at our expense. America, we have to wake up and get our nation back under control, and soon. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Colonel, when I joined the Coast Guard back in 1991, one of the questions that was asked if I'd ever used marijuana. And if you had, you weren't getting into the military, especially the Coast Guard. Well, I guess that was a different time. Now we're in desperate times, at least when it comes to recruiting. Lawmakers are proposing relaxing the policies on marijuana use. Lawmakers are saying things like, quote, "I do not believe we should be testing for cannabis in people who want to join the military. Instead, we should be thinking about cannabis more in the terms of alcohol," unquote. It has been raised that many people are now using cannabis legally under state law. In fact, so far, 23 states and Washington, D.C. have legalized the recreational use of marijuana. The lawmakers believe this will help relieve some of the issues we're having with military recruiting. And maybe they're right, but potential recruits need to understand that the Department of Defense is still prohibiting marijuana use for individuals who are actively serving in the military, and they're going to continue to test for that use. One of the amendments on the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act would ban the use of authorized defense funds to deny a security clearance just because the applicant used marijuana legally in their home state. And another amendment directs the Pentagon to create an expedited waiver process for military recruits and applicants who have previously legally used marijuana or have a documented history of marijuana usage without misconduct offenses by reducing the waiver authority to the lowest level, such as a recruiting station commander. Today, marijuana use is still a disqualifying offense for anyone hoping to join the Army. But those who have left it in the past can ask for a waiver, just like recruits who have diabetes, chronic insomnia, or bunions on their feet. So I'm not sure how these proposed amendments to the 2024 Defense Act are actually going to help with recruiting. Seems like we already have a way forward with that. But for all Lines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss concerned veterans for America with Navy vet William Thomas. Then we'll talk with Korean War vet Howard Davis. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You are standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. Now, it's an honor to welcome Navy vet William Thomas. William's with Concerned Veterans for America, an organization that helps veterans and non-veterans help get our military and foreign policy on logical tracks. That's why I work with them all I can. Welcome to the show, William. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, Dennis. Truly appreciate it.
William, since I'm an Army guy, I like picking on Navy guys, and you're a Navy guy. So start by telling us about your time in the Navy. I promise not to pick on you too hard. When and why did you join, and what'd you do?
Sure, certainly, not at all. So like many folks out there, it's serving in our military is in the blood. We actually can trace our roots back, my family, all the way back to the War for Independence. So we've been here different lines, but for a long time. My grandfather served in the Navy, helped commission the USS Midway. He was a plank owner on that aircraft carrier. For your listeners out there, if you know what a Corsair is, he was an electrical mechanic on the Corsair. And from there, many other family members served in the Navy specifically. But my dad was kind of the black sheep, and he served in the Air Force as the air traffic controller. So long story short, serving in military service is in the family blood. And I just was a senior in high school when 9/11 happened. And my dad, having been in 73, was like, you're not joining up right away. Now, my family had always known that I was going to join the military. That was never a question and wasn't necessarily something that was encouraged, but wasn't discouraged either. If I wanted to make that choice, you know, that was my choice to make. And it was, and everybody knew it. But my dad encouraged me to go ahead and do 2 years of university before I went into the military. And I did so and enlisted in 2004. I originally enlisted as a mechanical engineer, which oddly enough, kind of helped progress my career in a way, because I became aware of some things that the Navy had to offer that I wasn't aware of when I first joined up. And I ended up doing 3 years aboard the USS Dubuque LPD-8, which is an amphibious landing ship, one of the oldest. It's actually was decommissioned in 2011. So I was down in mechanical spaces doing all that kind of fun stuff, but we were a troop transport, which means we transported Marines around, and getting to learn about the Marine Corps and what a hospital corpsman does for the Marine Corps. I quickly finished up my time aboard ship and cross-trained to become a corpsman and went over to what we call either the blue side or the green side, meaning you're staying with the Navy or you're choosing to go over with the Marine Corps. I chose to go over with the Marine Corps. And then so had met some corpsmen that were Special Amphibious Reconnaissance Corpsmen, and learned about what that was, and went down the recon path, tried out for recon, got picked up at 1st Recon Battalion, spent my time with them, went through recon training, et cetera, and served the rest of my active duty time there at 1st Recon Battalion. And when I left active duty in 2010, I went straight away to the reserves and was stationed with Charlie Company, 4th Recon out of San Antonio, and stayed there for the rest of my time in the reserves till 2015 when I left.
Well, I'll tell you what, my co-host, Skip Coriel, is a jarhead, so he will certainly appreciate what you just said. And thank you for your service. Okay, start by doing an overview. What does Concerned Veteran for America do? What's its mission? And then tell us your role there.
Certainly. So Concerned Veterans for America, as you said, we are one of the nation's largest policy advocacy organizations on veterans' healthcare reform, foreign policy, and fiscal responsibility at the DOD. And essentially what we are advocating for are the rights and freedoms that we as military members had already sacrificed for and that our families in our service had sacrificed for. As we've come back home now, we're fighting for those freedoms that we fought for while we were on active duty or reserve status, and making sure that the federal government adheres to the things that they promised.
Yes, sir. which is a nonstop challenge. What's your role?
Indeed. So my role, I'm a grassroots engagement director here in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area. And essentially what my job is to do is to go out amongst the community and to educate folks on what it is that we do, our policies, how they can get involved, but also to engage with our federal representatives that are supposed to be advocating for those three areas that we work on. And we want to build relationship with those folks so that when we bring a piece of legislation before them or a piece of legislation is brought forth by maybe another congressional leader that we like from a policy standpoint, we can get behind that piece of legislation and garner support for that legislation through those relationships that we've built with the representatives in our area. And here in Texas, we have four other folks that kind of work in the area that I work in. So we're being one of the larger states, we have quite a footprint here.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing Concerned Veterans for America with Navy vet William Thomas. I know one of the issues that you work on, because you're always working on it, and you even mentioned it, is VA healthcare reform. I get very good care from the VA, but I hear so many stories from other people, whether it's long time waiting or not enough support or whatever it is. There's a real need for healthcare reform, isn't there?
Absolutely, there is. And I'm glad that you yourself, Dennis, are receiving great care at the VA. And we do hear stories of other veterans from other veterans that they are receiving wonderful care at the VA. And we're absolutely thrilled to hear that and be informed on that, because what we do hear a lot of is that veterans are not being properly cared for. And so with our 2023 legislative agenda, some things that we're working on, a lot of folks don't realize that during the pandemic, almost 20 million appointments were canceled, which means veterans were not being seen for anything from having a cold, needing some prescriptions refilled, but having to see your general practitioner to get that done, to folks who, you know, lost a limb, have to see ortho, those sorts of things, which are things that impede mobility, et cetera. So from that standpoint, we're working on a piece of legislation called the Veterans Healthcare Freedom Act. And that's along with Senator Marsha Blackburn. She's actually spearheading the bill. And what that does is we're talking about wanting to expand community care for folks, veterans that live 2-3 hours from the nearest VA facilities, that they're, whether that's a hospital or a clinic, to guys and gals who have extended wait times at their current VA, whether that's, you know, 46 days in some locations. I think the current wait time here in Dallas is 26 days, so not that bad. There's other states where, you know, we're looking at upwards of 60 plus days wait time. So we want to expand that opportunity to go out in town to an approved provider, and you have the choice to be seen by whom you want to be seen by, and you're not having to drive 2 or 3 hours to get to the facility. You're not having to wait, you know, 60 days or even, you know, 20 days, some locations, whatever that may be. You have more fluidity and choice in the matter of where you're being seen, when you're being seen, and whom you're being seen by. And we believe that is something that obviously the civilian market has, that veterans should have that opportunity as well. So that's something that we're currently working on.
Well, you know, that certainly is true. And not to throw rocks anywhere, but there are sometimes when I've had extraordinary long wait times, even though I like my facility, and there's always room for improvement. But there also need to be some standards that are held across for all VA facilities that apparently aren't being held. And I appreciate the fact that you guys are out there trying to make it work so that we veterans get the kind of care that we deserve. It's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Absolutely is. And a lot of folks don't realize, especially in the civilian world, that when you raise your right hand and you say, you know, I will, and I sign the dotted line, we are signing a contract. So it is a contractual obligation. You know, we say, hey, we're going to fulfill our part of this contract. And the U.S. government says, hey, we're going to fulfill our part of this contract. And so all we're looking to do is make sure that that fulfillment of the government's part of their contract is done so to the utmost standard that it can be.
Yes, sir.
And there's all, like you said, always room for improvement. And that really we're not. And some folks, if it said, hey, all you guys are trying to do is privatize and get rid of the VA. And that is not true. We want to make that evident. That is 100% not true. but we are wanting to provide choices to veterans and have better access and faster access to that quality care. So
yes,
just want to point that out.
Good. There's more to discuss about getting things back on track, and William will stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, twice a week anyway. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Navy vet William Thomas from Concerned Veterans for America. William, you guys have got a legislative agenda that you're working on, and you've sort of generally outlined it already. We've already discussed the health care. What are the other things that you guys work on? I know one of them was trying to get the Department of Defense to be more logical financially. Their money goes all kinds of places. That is one of the areas, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely, it is. And so being fiscally responsible with those taxpayer funds, you know, as a veteran, those are things that we were deployed overseas or whether we were, you know, here back stateside providing logistical support, whatever that may be, funds were always involved. And so one of the things that we advocate for is making sure that there is a rigorous oversight of where those funds are going. I mean, look what just recently came out in the news, you know, $6 billion of taxpayer funds for, you know, lost. The DOD can't explain where those went. And so that's one of the things that we're talking about is why are we spending, you know, $5,000 on big screen TVs, you know, when better allocation for those funds and better ways to spend those funds that are proportional to what the civilian populace expect of our military. And then doing that, we do understand their budgets, and you sir, you're a colonel, you understand that you have a budget, fiscal budget for the year. And if that budget isn't spent, that money is pulled back and your budget gets smaller at the next fiscal year's disbursement of funds. And so a lot of times what you see is units coming into September, they're already planning in August where they're going to finish spending those funds so that they don't lose that funding the next fiscal year starting in October. And really, there's a better way of finding allocation for funding, finding those places that if funds weren't necessarily fully spent, but we need a piggy bank, if you will, that if something pops up later down the road the next fiscal year that we were not anticipating because a surge in troops on a particular deployment happens or new pieces of gear are needing to be issued, we have those funds already sitting in that pool to be pulled from. We understand that, but what we're talking about is when funds really just kind of disappear and we're not really fully understanding where those funds were spent. We want to make sure that that oversight is seen. We have a stronger oversight and there needs to be policies in place, taking looks at policy reform on how allocation of funds are done in the military.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it is true in the government at the end of the fiscal year, you better spend all your money, as you pointed out, or you lose the money. In the businesses I've run, if you were a division and you didn't spend all the money you had, I thought you were wonderful. And that money could be put aside for future use that you or somebody else, but it wasn't a negative. But in the government, it doesn't work that way. So that's definitely an area that needs work, not just in the military, but especially in the military. Okay, we got time for one more area. What's another one?
We can get into a little bit on the foreign policy, if you'd like. About, you know, our footprint in the Middle East with our 23 legislative agenda. We believe at CVA the Congress should have a drawdown in troop deployments to Syria, Yemen, and Somalia, because those particular operational theaters lack clear, achievable objectives and are not focused on core U.S. interests. And so in that, we're not saying that things aren't happening in those areas. We're not saying that we shouldn't necessarily have special operations troops over there keeping an eye, or the intelligence community over there keeping an eye on what's going on, because we don't want a resurgence of, say, like now we have ISIS-K or AQAP. And for those who don't know who those fun guys are, you know, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, different spinoff groups sometimes are given the opportunity to fill voids. So what we aren't advocating, we are not advocating for, is the allowance for that. However, we do want, again, that fiscal responsibility and making sure that we are not entering into mission creep. And by having non-clear objectives in a theater, that gives room for mission creep and more spending of taxpayer funds should that creep begin to take on more of a role. And so those are things that we as an organization want to watch out for. And that's why we're advocating for repealing or pulling back the number of troops in those operational theaters, because there are not clear objectives to be met.
I agree with that, because you're not only putting money at risk, you're putting lives of Americans at risk. We don't need to be fighting wars that we don't know how to win. And again, I agree with you. Having special ops guys and those kind of people in there, that's one thing. But no, we're in total agreement. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with William Thomas. Okay, William, take a minute now and discuss how listeners, veterans or non-veterans, can learn more about Concerned Veterans for America and how they can plug into you.
Absolutely. If you will go to our website at CV4A, that's Charlie Victor, the number 4alpha.org, there is a swath of information, a plethora, if you will, that you can see that the things that we're working on, our 2023 legislative agenda, policies that we've written, you can even read up on when we were an instrumental organization in getting the 2018 VA Mission Act passed and signed into law. All the things that we've done as an organization are there. Plus, should you have a VA story that you would like to share, we have a portal for that. It's called My VA Story, and you can go in there and tell us all about your experience, whether good or bad or indifferent, there with a VA, because we do want to collect those stories and understand where veterans are coming from when they tell us, hey, I'm having a great experience, or hey, I'm not having a great experience here at the VA. And that helps give us those left and right lateral limits down the road as we are looking at policies or creating policies that affect veterans.
Okay, well, you sort of started into my next question anyway. If a person plugs in, what's available there for somebody who is concerned about the fact that our government, particularly our military leaders, aren't being as responsible or focused as they should be? Somebody who plugs in, what kinds of tools can you give them to help influence that?
Absolutely. And so that's something that we love. And frankly, we need your help. Volunteers make up a lot of our driving force behind what we're able to accomplish. And so we have volunteer opportunities, depending on your region and state, to connect with the engagement directors within those states. But what we do is we primarily will phone bank. And a lot of folks say, oh, phone banking, well, yeah, okay. No, honestly, phone banking not only helps educate the public, but also helps educate us with what the public is looking for when it comes to VA healthcare reform. And we're taking that information to those federal representatives and saying, hey, here's what your constituents are saying about this particular piece of legislation. Can you, will you get behind what your constituents want done on this issue? And another area that we could use your help in is in the education sector, getting petitions signed. Believe it or not, again, those petitions, we're able to collect that data and use those numbers to hold these representatives, these federal representatives and senators accountable and saying, hey, here's what your constituents are saying that they want done and accomplished for veterans. And they know when we put these things into our system, it immediately fires those numbers out to their offices. And so it really doesn't matter if you're in from out of town and want to come help out, or you live locally and this is something that you want to do on a consistent basis. On top of those two areas, we also door knock. And we, again, through education, are educating the public on these topics, these issues that veterans are facing, and collecting that information to give to and hold accountable those federal representatives with what their constituents are asking for. And so really it's a driving factor and a driving force of knowing that grassroots community is pushing for this legislative policy, this legislative change to affect veterans' health care or foreign policy.
And that's incredibly important. That's what he's talking about, is the kind of things that actually makes a difference. It is a bit of a pain. It's a thing some people don't like to do. But if you want to help change our country, these are the kinds of things you got to do. And we're about out of time now. William, thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform. And now, I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, sir. I truly appreciate you giving the opportunity to come on your show, Dennis, and look forward to another opportunity to speak with you.
We'll do it. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Korean War vet Howard Davis. Then Coast Guard vet Mark Northrup will discuss getting VA support. And we'll discuss border and books with two Marines. That'll be interesting. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time to do pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.